Good morning and welcome. Today is Palm Sunday on the Christian calendar, and this week we also celebrate the Jewish holiday of Passover. Both holidays remind us about injustice. They remind us of how the poor, those who are different in race or creed, gender, sexual orientation, national origin, are still oppressed. Jesus and Moses, the central figures of those two holidays, were both leaders of oppressed people. Both were called to raise up the plight of the poor people, to make visible the oppression from the privileged of their time, to work for freedom, justice, and equality. Today, in our worship, we are reminded that we are called to do the same. May the light we now kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve you, Spirit of Freedom. Mike and I have a story for you. We're going to do it in words and in song, and you have a part too. Your part is, if you want to take a look at it, part of it is at number 104 in the hymnal. You're just going to sing the responses of the chorus. And I'm going to do the talking, and Mike's going to sing the verses, and we're going to tell you the Passover story. Mike, do you want to practice once for them?
I think you might know this one, but we'll start with one chorus.
Go down, Moses, way down in Egypt land, tell
this story starts like any good story, and how's that? Once upon a time. Once upon a time, the Jewish people were slaves in the land of Egypt. They suffered greatly under Pharaoh's harsh rule, and they yearned for freedom.
When Israel was in Egypt's land, let my people go. Oppressed so hard they could not stand, let my people go. Go down, Moses, way down in Egypt land, tell old Pharaoh to let my people go.
Well, there was one among them named Moses. He was born a Hebrew, but he was raised by the daughter of Pharaoh, so he knew how things worked in Egypt. He fled to a place called Midian, and there he was a shepherd. And one day, a sheep wandered off, and he went to find that sheep, and something amazing happened. He saw a bush that was burning, but the fire wasn't burning the bush up. It just continued to glow. So he drew near the bush, and he heard God speak to him.
The Lord told Moses what to do.
Let my people go.
To lead the tribe of Israel through.
Let my people go.
Go down. Moses, way down in Egypt's land, tell old Pharaoh to let my people go.
So he went to Pharaoh, and he said, let my people go. And what do you think Pharaoh said?
No way.
No, no way. But then bad things started to happen. God caused plagues to come, bad things to happen. Things like frogs falling from the sky and grasshoppers everywhere and lice on everybody, you know, that made them itch, and the animals got sick. And there was darkness that came over the earth. 10 plagues or bad things all together, and the last being the death of every firstborn Egyptian child. So Pharaoh, with all that happening, gave in and said, okay, go. Moses had the people get ready. But then Pharaoh changed his mind. A cloud showed Moses where to go, and with his staff, he parted the waters of the Red Sea so the Hebrew people could cross. But Pharaoh's army followed them, and the sea closed.
For you the cloud shall clear the way.
Let my people go.
A fire by night, a shade by day.
Let my people go.
People were free from the Egyptians. They made it out of slavery, but many new trials would await them.
We need not always weep and moan.
Let my people go.
And wear these slavery chains forlorn.
Let my people go.
Go down.
Moses, way down in Egypt's land, tell old Pharaoh to let my people go.
Invite you to join in responsive reading number 593 in the Gray Hymnal, words of Desmond Tutu. I'll read the regular type if you read the italics. Liberation is costly. Even after the Lord had delivered the Israelites from Egypt, they had to travel through the desert.
They had to bear the responsibilities and difficulties of freedom.
There was starvation and thirst, and they kept complaining.
They complained that their diet was monotonous.
Many of them preferred the days of bondage and the flesh pots of Egypt.
We must remember that liberation is costly. It needs unity.
We must hold hands and refuse to be divided. We must be ready.
Some of us will not see the day of our liberation physically.
But those people will have contributed to the struggle.
Let us be united. Let us be filled with hope. Let us be those who respect one another.
Today we bring together two stories of the Jewish people living under oppression. The yearning for a leader to bring them freedom. Both tell the story of an ongoing struggle for freedom and all the complexities of the struggle. Most of you know the Christian story, and you've heard the Passover story, and inherit in that Passover message and in the Christian message of Palm Sunday is the assertion that no human should be subservient to another. The injustice of the Egyptian society of Exodus time or the Roman-occupied Jerusalem of the first century was that they failed to recognize what we affirm today as our first principle, namely the inherent worth and dignity of every person. To talk about freedom is to talk about equality. Equality is the inseparable companion principle to freedom. If we do not truly believe in the equal worth and dignity of another person, whose race or ethnicity or national origin or sexual orientation or gender identification or religious belief or ableness, to name just some categories, that is different from our own, then we cannot truly be an advocate for their freedom. In fact, our failure to recognize their equal worth and dignity will result in our participation in their oppression. In the Passover story, Moses frees the oppressed Israelites in Egypt and leads them to freedom. The Jews' struggle for freedom was not one that ended with the Exodus story some 3,000 years ago. There were many more oppressors to come. In the first century, the Jews of the Palm Sunday story were living under Roman occupation and oppression. Like their ancestors, they yearned for freedom too. They greet Jesus at the Jerusalem gate in that story, essentially hailing him as a liberator, one who they hope will in some way free them from Roman oppression. We know that does not go well. The Roman rulers suppress this liberation movement, but the yearning for freedom does not die with the one on the cross. We know the Jews suffer great oppression in modern times as well. But they're not alone. Today, for so many in our world and in our own country, and even in our community, there is still oppression. There are still many people yearning for freedom. Today, I want to focus on that freedom, not as something once won and therefore complete, but as something for which we continue to struggle. I want to look at the ways in which some of us are still oppressed, and the ways in which we all do continue to still oppress others. I want to begin by digging into the Passover story. You heard a synopsis of it in our Message for All Ages with Mike's help and your help. You know that the Hebrew people had been slaves in Egypt for a long time. Moses, who was a person with a foot in two worlds, Hebrew by birth but raised by Pharaoh's daughter, was their leader. He goes to Pharaoh and pleads, "Let my people go." Pharaoh's got a good thing going with all this Hebrew slave labor, and he's not impressed with Moses' plea for freedom. Just like the Roman emperor of Jesus' time had a good thing going oppressing the Jews of that time. In the Exodus story, it's just not in Pharaoh's interest to free slaves. But then come those horrible plagues, 10 of them, the locusts, the boils, the famine, the frogs, and finally the death of the firstborn child of each Egyptian household. And Pharaoh relents. He says, "Take your people and go." And at first, the Egyptian people were favorably disposed towards this, and they even gave the parting Hebrews some things they needed for the trip. The Hebrew packed in such a hurry, they baked their bread without even waiting for it to rise. And of course, that's not so. And then they begin their journey. And that brings us up to the 14th chapter of Exodus. And I'd like to read just a little bit of that to you. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, the minds of Pharaoh and his officials were changed towards the people. And they said, "What have we done? We've let the Israelites go and lost their services." So he had his chariot made ready, and he took his army with him, the Egyptians, all Pharaoh's horses and chariots, horsemen and troops, pursued the Israelites and overtook them. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians coming after them. They were terrified, and they cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were not enough graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." It seems to me two things happen in this passage. First, Pharaoh goes back on his word. The actions of Pharaoh and the Egyptians do not conform with that declaration of freedom that he made. The Egyptians' self-interest and the gain to be had from the abuse of these people as slave labor trumps both Pharaoh's promise and any issues of fairness or justice or equality. And the second part of the passage I read addresses the mindset of those who are long denied real freedom. in the interest of survival, they are ready to become complacent in their own oppression. When you live with the mind and the culture of an oppressed person, it is easy to quickly lose faith in any promise of freedom. It's easy even to get angry with your liberator. And isn't that what happened to Jesus in the Palm Sunday story too? But let's dig deeper into Pharaoh's change of heart. The granting of freedom to the Hebrew people did not come about because of Pharaoh's enlightened reflection on the inherent worth and dignity of every individual. Rather, Pharaoh only freed them because of the trouble the Hebrew God was making with those plagues. Soon after he granted them freedom, he realized that their freedom challenged his privilege. Words of freedom were spoken at best half-heartedly, and self-interest quickly led the Egyptians to ignore them and to try to return the Jews to slavery. And this is not an ancient story, is it? One doesn't have to go back 3,000 years to find that story. In the mid-1800s in this country, the emancipation of black slaves was declared, but the chariots, if you will, of Jim Crow, of segregation, of de facto slavery, followed right on their heels, just as Pharaoh followed on the heels of the Hebrew Exodus. It seems to me that we did so, and in some ways continue to do so, largely for the same reasons that Pharaoh went after the Hebrews. That is, privilege and the self-interest of some was being challenged by the freedom of others. It took a good 100 more years and a well-organized civil rights movement in our nation to have the Proclamation of Freedom lead to any sort of real recognition of equality between blacks and whites, and we still have a long way to go. We've seen what happened in Ferguson, Missouri, and New York City, and in many other places, as issues of oppression based on race continue to raise their ugly head. In this congregation, we've talked about what Michelle Alexander called the new Jim Crow, brought about in large part by the massive incarceration of black men and the way our criminal justice system operates. We've seen our criminal justice system fail to treat black men equally. Just in the past few weeks, the Justice Department revealed in a report that an entire city police department was systematically oppressing black people. To look at the story of freedom and racial equality in our own land is to come face to face with the uncomfortable issue of the disparity between those declarations of equal worth and dignity of every person, our many laws of against discrimination, our court decisions which clearly proclaim that separate is not equal, and then against that, the reality of where most people of color in our society are today. We're uncomfortable with this discussion because we'd like to believe that Americans do not discriminate on the basis of race, that blacks and others who have been oppressed but who now are declared to be of equal worth and dignity are in fact treated that way in our society. We want to believe that. But our experience still tells us something different. If we look at our nation, we realize that blacks and other minority groups continue to be systematically ghettoized. Yes, there's been progress, but let's be honest. If you are black in this nation, your chances of going to jail, of being the victim of violence, of having a child at a young age, are dramatically greater than if you are white. And your chances of owning a home and getting a fair mortgage to pay for it and getting a good job and getting a raise and sending your child to college, even getting decent health care, are dramatically less. 60 years ago, schools were ordered to segregate because black schools were dramatically inferior to whites. And you know what? They still are. Poor public education continues the cycle of black poverty, which in turn fuels crime. The income gap between whites and blacks just continues to get wider all the time. Yes, some progress has certainly been made. In our UU churches, perhaps in your jobs, we see black doctors and lawyers and professionals, and yes, we have a black president of the United States. We see these as signs of progress and towards racial equality, and of course they are positive signs, but they are not the norm. Come to the city. Come to Roxbury or Dorchester and see how the race card plays there. My intent is not to weigh you down with a litany of facts, but to make a simple point. I think it's expressed very well in William Faulkner's world. The past isn't dead and buried. It isn't even the past. Racism is still with us in our time, the time after the legal decisions and after the legislation and after the proclamations of equality. The question for us is, are we acting in ways that are true to those proclamations, or are we acting like Pharaoh? For racism to end, we have to let go of some of our privilege, some of our self-interest. And so often we are just not ready to do that. You know, in the New York Harbor, there's perhaps the greatest symbol of freedom, the Statue of Liberty. And it proclaims on its base, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. We proclaim that we are the land where the oppressed can come and find freedom. But how do we really treat those people who come, those immigrants, both those who arrive with proper documentation and those who do not? Strikes me again that with respect to our immigrant communities, our response is very much like Pharaoh's. I don't want your freedom to challenge my job or cost me money. We may give lip service to the rights for migrant workers, for immigrants who mow our lawn or clean our houses, but we just don't want the price to go up. Look at how difficult it's been even to get our Congress to consider raising the minimum wage. The truth be told, these migrant farmers, factory workers, service industry workers, fast food workers, chambermaids don't have the freedom that we do, and they don't have it because giving it to them might make us a bit less privileged. It might cost us a bit of money. These are not the only folks who are oppressed, whose inherent worth and dignity is not recognized, and who therefore don't enjoy the freedom that others do. You know, there's still actual slavery in our world. Children are captured and people are sold as slaves today. Proud that we as a congregation have supported an organization that assists victims of human trafficking. And we've begun to learn more about this horrible, almost unthinkable form of oppression. And the plight of women and girls in many areas of the world, in the increasing attack on the rights of gay and lesbian folks in Russia and in Africa, are examples of ways that freedom is being denied to many. And let's take this out of the national and world stage and look at the issue of oppression much closer to home. This month, we've been engaged with the White Ribbon Campaign, where men have pledged to refrain from abusing women. Domestic abuse is just another form of oppression. We've heard about those extreme cases in the past, you know, the horror stories of women who've been locked in a basement for 20 years and subject to abuse and denied any kind of freedom. But there are oppressed women and men and children right here in our community. They're less visible, they're still oppressed and they're denied freedom and dignity. Husbands who demean their wives. Husbands who won't let their wives leave the home. People who mentally and physically abuse their partners or their children. They're all oppressors. And the voices of abuse, whether it's from domestic violence or economic abuse of migrant workers, is just often drowned out by that mantra that we're the land of freedom and equality, the land of the free. Those in oppressed places are often like the Hebrews, who, when chased by Pharaoh, said, "We should have kept our mouths shut and been good slaves. At least we'd have something." We see that all the time. Abused women, afraid to leave a terrible situation because they're afraid they'll be unable to support themselves. Ridiculously low-paid workers, afraid to ask for a raise or unionize for fear they will just not have a job. So many who are oppressed, who don't really have freedom, just can't raise their voices. The consequences are too great to challenge those who benefit from their oppression. And of course, if we look beyond our own shores, we see freedom denied in so many places. We see the same fear in the oppressed people elsewhere, the fear of raising the issue. Isn't that the story of those who make our clothes in Asian sweatshops? Isn't it the story of those, especially the women, who live under Taliban rule? Isn't it the story of gay men and women in Russia, or worse yet, in African countries that have made being gay a capital offense? So do you see why it's important that we retell the ancient story again this year? We do so to remind ourselves that still real freedom is denied to many, that freedom is an ongoing struggle. We do so to remind us to examine our role as privileged individuals who regularly benefit from the unfair treatment of others. We do so to resolve that we will do our best not to be part of the oppression, and that we will do what we can, in any way that we can, to uphold the inherent worth and dignity of every other person. You know, it's not easy to stand with the oppressed, to stand against oppression. It's often not popular. The Palm Sunday story of Jesus riding into Jerusalem to proclaim that message, in that story he knew he was likely riding to his death because he was doing that. It's a story of profound courage. And addressing oppression takes courage. We as a society collectively need to show more courage. Jesus and Moses both spoke truth to power. They challenged the privileged and the wealthy when they saw that their actions were oppressing others. And don't we need to do more of that too? We need to do so for the oppressed, but you know what? We also need to do so for ourselves. The great civil rights leader, Fannie Lou Hamer, put it this way. Nobody is free unless everybody is free. Some here have known and still may know oppression themselves. Everyone here has benefited from the labor of those who have been treated unfairly. We've got lots of proclamations about freedom, but we really don't know what it truly feels like to be free when there are those close at hand and far away who are held back, denied opportunity, abused, oppressed, even still made slaves. The challenge, I think, of these two great holidays is simple. It's to do what we can to end oppression anywhere we can, so we can know, indeed, what it truly means, what it truly feels like to be free. We close with words of Frederick Gillis. May the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. Amen.